All right, let's open our Bibles today to the book of Proverbs, and we want to begin today here in the ninth chapter, Proverbs chapter 9. Now, you know, life is not really all that complicated. I mean, we like to think of it as being complicated, because then when we're not living life the way that we ought to, we've got a good excuse. Well, after all, it's very complicated. How's a guy like me supposed to be able to know all these things, be able to do these things right? And yet, as we go through Proverbs, the Proverbs is going to show us the simplicity of life. That, look, in life, there are two voices that are always... they're always crying out to us. And the outcome of our life is going to be based in large part upon which of these two voices you happen to be listening to. Now, in life, everybody wants the same thing. Every human being on this planet wants the same thing. You want to be happy. You want to be fulfilled. You want to have a nice life. You want to be able to find contentment. You want to find people who love you and these kinds of things. And what Proverbs is telling us is that there are two ways that you can get these things. You can either get it by listening to the wisdom of God, or you can attempt to get it by listening to the foolishness of the world. Now, Solomon is speaking to his son. We are reading the recorded discussion that took place between a dad and his son. And because it's taking place between a dad and his son, the father is putting these two voices in a female image. He's saying to his son that, look, there are two women who are after your ear. There are two women that are whispering in your ear. There is Miss Wisdom and there is Miss Foolish. Now, I suppose that had Solomon been giving counsel to his daughter, he would have said, hey, honey, there are two guys out there that want your attention, Mr. Wise and Mr. Foolish. And so Proverbs is showing us this contrast between what does the wisdom of God have to say to you and I, and what is the way of the world? What does our own devices have to say to us? Well, in verse 1, he says, wisdom has built her house, and she has hewn out seven pillars, and she's prepared meat, and she has mixed her wine, and she has furnished her table, and she has sent out her maidens, and she cries out from the highest places of the city, whosoever is simple, let him turn in here. And as for him that lacks understanding, she calls to him, come and eat my bread, drink the wine that I have mixed. Forsake foolishness and live and go into the way of understanding. Now, he says to his son that, look, wisdom cries every single day. That the wisdom of God is crying out through all the earth every single day. And what is wisdom crying? It's crying, hey, stupid people, turn into me, all right? The voice of wisdom is crying out to humanity. Is there any that lacks understanding? Is there any of you that are stupid out there that you're tired of being stupid and you're tired of experiencing the outcome of your stupidity? Then notice he says, turn unto me, turn away from foolishness, turn to me. And then notice he says, and you shall live. Now, what's interesting here is that Solomon is saying is that, look, you got these two women that are crying and wanting your attention. One is offering you a feast and the other is offering you a funeral. Notice that he says in verse 7, he that corrects the scoffer gets shame for himself, and he that rebukes a wicked man only harms himself. Do not correct a scoffer lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. Give instruction unto a wise man, and he will be wiser still. Teach a just man, and he shall increase in his learning. Now, throughout this book, Solomon is saying to his son, is that, look, you got wisdom and you got foolishness. So you can either become a wise person, or you can become a fool. And he's always contrasting the wise from the foolish. Now, notice, beginning here, and we're going to see it running all through Proverbs, is that the difference between a wise person and a fool has little or nothing to do with IQ. There are plenty of people with unbelievable IQs that are just as dumb as a board. And there are a lot of foolish people that, because they are being governed by God's wisdom, they're brilliant. They're wise individual, and they live wisely. Notice that the difference between the fool and the wise person is the issue of one is teachable and one is not. What can you do with a person who is unteachable? What can you do with a person that thinks they know it all, they got it all wired together, and there's nothing that you and I are able to tell them? And here Solomon is saying to his son, look, when you come up against somebody who's a scoffer, you know, you're a Bible thumper, and you know, you're a religious, self-righteous know-it-all, and they just are scoffing at what it is that you believe, he says, leave them alone. If you push the issue on them, they're just going to turn around and punch you in the nose or some such thing. Look at John the Baptist. Here he's holding his Bible study. He's baptizing a few people by the River Jordan. And the Pharisees and the Sadducees show up. What does he do? Does he make them feel welcomed? Oh, good. There's more people. He knows they're scoffers coming to his Bible study. And he says to them, who warned you about the judgment to come, you den of vipers? He realized they're not there for the truth. They're there to put down. They're there to criticize. They're there to argue. And so Solomon is saying to his son, just save your breath, man. They know where you stand. They know what your positions are. Don't force the issue. Just let them go. But then he says in verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and the years of life will be added unto you. If you are wise, then you are wise for yourself. And if you scoff, then you shall bear it alone. Now, back in chapter 1, he said that the fear of the Lord was the beginning of knowledge. Now he says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. We could be tempted to say, oh, well, you know, it's the same coin. He's just showing us two different sides. But those two things are very different. Not just different in the sense that wisdom is different than knowledge, but the word beginning in chapter 1 is different in the Hebrew than the word beginning here. The word beginning in chapter 1, where the reverence of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, that word beginning means the sum total of knowledge. And the idea is that you can just gain knowledge and gain understanding, and you can just, you know, go to college forever, I suppose. But if it does not lead you to a reverencing of God, then you are not going to obtain the sum total of knowledge. So what? You're the smartest guy in hell. Where, you know, what is the blessing in that? You know, you remember Jesus said, what does it matter if a man gains the entire world and loses his own soul? So what if you're the richest person in hell? Where's the benefit in that? So the sum total of knowledge should always lead us to a reverence of God. Now, this word beginning means that the starting place, the foundation, the baseline, that the starting point for wisdom, or wisdom is the proper application of knowledge. It is with the reverence of God. If you want to properly begin to apply knowledge in your life, the place where you have to start is, as he says here, the reverencing of God. Then notice in verse 13, a foolish woman. Now, he talked about Miss Wise and what she is saying. Now he turns to Miss Foolish. A foolish woman is clamorous. She's simple. She knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house and on the seat by the highest place of the city to call to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in there. And as for him that lacks understanding, she says to him, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, and that her guests are in the depths of hell. So again, he's using these imagery here, these two images of women. Now, notice that the way of the world and the wisdom of this world, notice that they make false promises. And what is the false promise? Number one, stolen water is sweet. You can rip people off. You can take advantage of people. You can bend the edges. You can skirt the regulations, and you are going to get away with it. It's a lie. A man will reap whatever a man sows. And if you are making a living off of thievery, it is only a matter of time before it's going to catch up with you. And notice that she also says that bread eaten in the secret place or eaten in that isolated place, that is a pleasant thing. So here's a woman who is offering what appears to be the promise of a banquet, but in reality, Solomon is saying she's offering a funeral. I mean, there are dead people at her banquet, all right? There are people on their way to hell at her banquet. Don't be listening to her. And so he says here in chapter 9, son, you've got wisdom that's offering great blessing, and you've got foolishness that's offering judgment. Now, as we come to chapter 10, we come to what we traditionally think of as the Proverbs of Solomon. From chapter 10 all the way through chapter 22, there are going to be 375 sayings of Solomon. These two lines of contrast, that this is what happens to the wise, and this is what happens to the wicked. And so he begins in verse 1 by saying this, the Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the grief of his mother. Now, of course, children can become incredible sources of blessing. That as a parent, that if you have got a child that blesses you, you realize there's a lot in life that you can put up with. It just seems that a child that is a blessing is just so able to offset whatever is negative going on. You can hate your job. You can hate your neighbor. You can hate all the junk that's going on in your life. But you got this child that is such a blessing, and you're just so proud of them. And what they are offering you by way of blessing is such an emotional resource. It's just such a blessing that it just buoys you over the floodwaters of anything negative in your life. But then contrasting it, that you can have everything perfect in your life. And how many of us know parents like this? They got the perfect job. They're living in the perfect neighborhood. They got all kinds of friends. They have good physical health. But even though they have all of these blessings, their kid is a moron. Their kid is out just living this selfish, self-destructive life. And all of these blessings that are in their life, it means nothing because they've got this wayward child out there that's just destroying themselves. And Solomon is saying to his son, realize what a great source of blessing you are to your mom and dad. But conversely, realize what a potential curse you can be to your mom and dad. Just an incredible source of a headache. He says, the treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. The Lord will not allow the righteous soul to famish, but he casts away the desire of the wicked. He who is slack of hand, that is somebody that is lazy, they become poor. But the hand of the diligent make rich. He that gathers in the summer is a wise son. And he that sleeps in the summer is a son that causes shame. Now, again, remember, Solomon has a lot to say about laziness. Solomon has a lot to say about hard work. And again, remember, who's he talking to? He's talking to his son, the son of the king. And of course, being the son of the king would sort of set the stage for a young man to kind of grow up lazy, right? I mean, you're living in a big house with all kinds of servants. Why work? Why do anything? And Solomon recognizes that, hey, potentially my son could gravitate towards being a lazy person. Now, isn't it interesting that he says in verse 3, God is gonna meet your need. God knows how to take care of those. And then he turns around in verse 4 and verse 5, and he says, hey, now make sure that you work hard. Well, wait a minute. I thought God's gonna meet my need. Why do I have to work hard? How is God gonna meet your need? God is gonna meet your need by blessing the work that you're bringing forth. God is gonna bless your business. God is gonna bless you on the job. There's too much laziness that goes on under a spiritual blanket. Well, I'm waiting on God. I'm waiting on God to bless you. Look, stop waiting on God and go get a job. That's Solomon's counsel here. Go out, get a job, and watch how God will bless the work of your hands. God's given you strength. He's given you a mind. And God will bless these things that he's given you. Now, he, of course, is not talking about the disabled. He is not talking about the person that is now, retired and so forth. He's talking about an able-bodied person that just doesn't want to work. And so Solomon says to his son, hey, make sure that you're not gravitating toward laziness. Remember what Paul told the Thessalonians. Who is a spiritual person? A person who works and eats their own food. Somebody that's living off of somebody else is not a spiritual person. He says, blessings are the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. The memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. Now, isn't it true that there are some people, you remember they're dead and you smile because you're glad they're dead. They won't hassle you anymore. But there are other people whom they are dead and you remember them and you smile because they were a blessing. I was thinking the other day, we used to have an old guy here by the name of Elmer. Well, when we were in the gym on Beacon Street, and this guy, he would bring bag of candy every Sunday to give to the kids. And there were numerous times where he would come up to me after the service and he'd give me an envelope of cash and he'd say, now, get this money to this family over here because I think they've kind of fallen on a little rough patch and they need groceries and need to keep their utilities going. Now, if you tell them it came from me, I'm going to hit you and I'm never coming to this church again. He was that kind of a guy, just a guy that was so generous, but he didn't want anybody to ever know about it. And I was thinking about him the other day and I just, a little smile came across. Oh, yeah, I remember that guy. What a great guy that was. Now, he says the memory of the righteous, it's blessed. There are people in our life that we think they've gone on to be with the Lord, and it's just a blessing to think about them. Now, conversely, the name of the wicked will rot. How many little girls have been born recently and have been given the name Jezebel, right? Nobody names their little girl Jezebel. That is a wicked name that is rotting in the annals of history. How many little boys are called Adolf or called Judas, right? I mean, the wicked name rots. We don't name our kids those names. Those names are rotting in history. He says, the wise in heart will receive commands, but the prating fool will fall. He that walks in integrity walks securely. But he who is perverse in his ways, it will become known. And Solomon is saying to his son, it will catch up with you. Rip people off and get away with it for so long, eventually it will keep up. But notice again how he brings up this concept here that, look, the difference between the wise and the perverse is this issue of being teachable. John Calvin said, look, nobody on our planet has the complete knowledge of God. Know that. Nobody knows all there is to know about God. And John Calvin said the reason why God has designed it that way is so that we would walk, first of all, in humility. That in every situation that we find ourselves in every conversation and in every Bible study, every meeting that we walk into, we would be reminded, I don't know it all. I don't know all that there is to know. And so that we would go into every situation with humbleness of mind. But then he also said another reason for that is to encourage interaction between believers. I know I don't know it all, and you know that you don't know it all. Now, I know about three things. Now, I don't know. Do you know the three things I know, or do you know three things that I don't know? And so we interact with each other, recognizing that, look, I don't have all the truth. You don't have all the truth. Why don't you tell me what you know? I'll tell you what I know, and then we'll know a little bit more, right? We'll be able to submit one to another. We'll be able to encourage one another. So the wise person, again, is a teachable individual. He that winks, and again, in that culture, I suppose today we might say he that would throw a gang sign, right? Winking was a way that you could sort of send a signal to do something nasty to somebody. He that winks with his eye causes trouble, but the prating fool will fall. The mouth of the righteous is a well of life, and violence covers the mouth of the wicked. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sin. There are some people, are there not? They're not going to be happy. They will never be happy in life. They are just of a negative bent. It doesn't matter what happens in their life. They're miserable. Yet you say to them today, oh, gorgeous day we're having. Oh, isn't it just a great day? And their response, well, it's going to rain this weekend, ruin my weekend probably. And it just doesn't matter. I remember in one of C.S. Lewis's characters, I don't remember which story it was in, but he called him the perpetual sneer. And there are people like, they're just the perpetual sneer. There's just nothing going to make them happy. And notice that he says, they stir up strife. They're in the church, they're in the workplace, they're in the neighborhood, they're in the PTA. They're everywhere, and all they do is stir up. They're not happy, and they want to make sure nobody else is happy with them. But notice the contrast that love covers all sin. Now, again, he's not talking about we got some guy over here that's sleeping around with other men's wives, and, oh, let's not say anything. Let's let love cover that sin. He's not talking about people who are immoral, and they're just in your face with their immorality. But he's talking about situations where I could correct the person. They've said something that's just a little off, just a little wrong. But you know what? It's just no big deal. And so I'm just going to let it slide. If you're the kind of person that you jump 6 feet in the air at the slightest provocation, then you're not a person that's walking in love, and you're not a spiritually wise person. But a person that can say, well, they didn't quite say that right, they didn't quite do that right, but you know what? 5 years from now, it's not going to make any difference at all, and so therefore, I'm just going to look right past it, and I'm not going to point out what they have done or said that is wrong. He says in verse 13, wisdom is found in the lips of him that has understanding, but a rod is for the back of him who is devoid of understanding. Again, he gets into these personality types. There are some people, they're only going to learn in prison. They're only going to learn when they're behind bars. It just seems that wisdom has to be beaten into them. That it just seems that, you know, God says to them, well, we can do it the easy way. We can do it the hard way. And they respond with, well, let's try that hard way one more time. Let's see if that'll work out any better. And they're just void of understanding. God wants to be gracious. God wants to be merciful to them. But they are just so bent on their way and their stubbornness and their refusal to think that they can be taught something, that the only way they can learn is with a rod put across their back. He says, wise people store up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near to destruction. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. Now, we have a proverb that says the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Now, Solomon is not saying that this is necessarily evil. You got a rich guy over here, and because he's a rich guy, he's able to increase his wealth. It's an observation that a dad is making to his son. A rich person who has resources that are not spoken for, and if a deal comes along, he's got these resources that he can snatch up that deal and then sell for a profit at a later date. I read an article about a billionaire just yesterday. I can't remember his name, but you know, the condo market in Florida in some areas is just taking a severe nosedive, and this billionaire is buying up every condo that he can in Florida, and he's going to sit on it for a few years, and then he's probably going to turn around and make a profit off of it. Now, is that evil? No, it's not evil. It's just a truth of life that if you have resources, you can wisely invest those resources to make more resources, where if you're poor, you don't have those resources to invest. And so I see a father saying to a son, look, do you want to continue to gravitate towards poverty, or do you want to gravitate towards wealth? Well, then you're going to have to work hard, and you're going to have to be a wise person. And as a general rule, that's what's going to come your way. Now, he says the labor of the righteous leads to life, the wages of the wicked to sin. He that keeps instruction is in the way of life, but he, again, who refuses correction goes astray. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. In the multitude of words, boy, if we can learn verse 19, in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. Again, the more you run your mouth, the greater the risk you're running of saying something wrong. If you always keep your mouth closed, you will never say anything wrong. And the more you yap, the more you spout off, sooner or later, I mean, the odds are against you, right? I mean, eventually you're going to overstep your boundaries and say something about somebody that you wish that you wouldn't have said. So in the multitude of words, there lacks not sin. Then he says in verse 20, the tongue of the righteous is choicer. I mean, how many times has somebody come up to you and they have just said the right thing? They've opened their mouth at the right time, and they've said the right words, and it was such a blessing. It just added prosperity to you. The heart of the wicked is worth little. The lips of the righteous, they feed many. But fools die for lack of wisdom. The blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow to it. Now think about this. How wealthy are you because you know God? Now, I'm not talking about the wealth that'll be yours in heaven and walking the streets of gold. I'm talking about what you have in your relationship today. How wealthy are you? I mean, think about being able to raise your children in a home where they're being taught that Jesus loves them and that he's got a plan for their life. Maybe you came to the Lord late in life, and so when you came to the Lord, he brought a bunch of baggage in with you, and he's been working on that baggage since the day you've been saved. But what a blessing for your kids to be able to come to the Lord, not bringing all of that emotional baggage and all of that turmoil that he has to deal with at a later date. How much is that worth? What kind of a price can you put on being able to raise a kid in a healthy, wholesome environment? How much is it worth for you to be able to get in your bed at night, to have your head hit that pillow, to look heavenward and say, God, I'm yours, and the issues of my life are for you to worry about, and so I'm going to sleep, see you in the morning. I mean, how much is that worth to be able to just fall asleep in Jesus and to know that the issues of your life are being handled by the Creator of all? What kind of a price can you put on that? And so Solomon says to his son, talking about material wealth, the rich getting richer, and talking about working hard and prospering and all. He said, look, don't forget this, that the blessing of the Lord, that's what makes you rich. You want to talk about wealth? You want to talk about something that you can't put a price on? Have a relationship with God. He said to do evil is like sport to a fool. There are some people, I mean, crime is a game to them, isn't it? I mean, it's just, you know, how much dope can I sell and get away with it? How, you know, how many people can I rip off and get away with it? It's like a sport to them. But a man of understanding, he has wisdom. The fear of the wicked will come upon them. Have you ever noticed it? Have you ever known a thief? And what does a thief fear? A thief fears to get ripped off. You show me a guy that is paranoid about getting ripped off, and I'll show you a thief. I mean, he's got everything padlocked, you know, up one side and down the other, and he's telling you don't trust anybody, and you better watch your back and all this. And why is he that way? Because that's what he does to other people, and so it's just coming back to bite him. So the fear of the wicked come upon him, and the desire of the righteous will be granted. When a whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation. I love verse 26. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is a lazy man to those who send him. Now, hey, I suppose maybe instead of vinegar, we might say fluoride. You know, you ever have that fluoride treatment? Oh, man, what a pain that is to the teeth. But he says here that, look, you got some guy that's supposed to be doing an errand for you. You got some guy working for you, right? And you say to him, you know, first thing in the morning, look, it's got to be done today. All right, make sure you do this today. All right, yeah, I'll do it, whatever. 10 o'clock, you just say, hey, you get it done. Well, I'm just about there. I'm going to start working on it. Noon, have you done it yet? Well, I'm just about there. You know, 3 o'clock, you got it done yet? And remember, it's got to be done. Yeah, I'll get to it. Quitting time, do you got it done? No, I'm going to work on it tomorrow. It's like, you're just going mad with this person. You've sent him to do a job, and he won't do it. Now, Solomon says it's like getting smoke in your eye. Now, it's not going to kill you, but it just irritates you, does it not? And you can have some people who are making promises to you, and some people are supposed to be doing things, and they never do them. Now, it's not going to kill you, but it just drives you nuts. And so he says in verse 27, the fear of the Lord prolongs days, but the years of the wicked shall be shortened. The hope of the righteous will be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked shall perish. The way of the Lord is strength for the upright, but destruction will come to the workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be removed, but the wicked will not inhabit the earth. The mouth of the righteous bring forth wisdom, but the perverse tongue, it will be cut out. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked, what is perverse. When you see a person always saying the inappropriate thing, you know, they're in mixed company, and they just say something that's just, it's like, what in the world did they say that for? 9 times out of 10, the person that doesn't know how to speak appropriately is a perverse person, because out of the heart, the mouth speaks. And if they've got a perverse heart, that perversity is going to be manifesting itself sooner or later in their speech. But he says that the righteous person, he knows what is appropriate. She knows what is acceptable. He knows the right time and the right place to say something. But then, more importantly, notice back in verse 27 that the fear of the Lord, that it prolongs days. You know, you ever go to, you know, family reunions or high school reunions, and I'm telling you, hard lot living, it leaves its mark on people, does it not? You go to some of these gatherings and you think, ay, 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 they look like they're 150 years old. Now, Billy Joel, he was a big fat liar when he sang Only the Good Die Young, because that runs contrary to what Solomon is telling to his son. Solomon is saying to his son, now look, if you will follow, like any other creation, if you will follow the manufacturer's guidelines, then the created product will work well, right? If you buy something and you don't use it in accordance with the manufacturer's guidelines, and then you try, and then when it breaks, you try and go back to the manufacturer and say, hey, you've got to honor your warranty, and yet they discover that you've been using it for something that it was never designed for, well, then the warranty's no good. In like manner, the manufacturer of the human body, the manufacturer of the human spirit, has also given us guidelines on how these instruments are to be used. And as a general rule, that if we will operate within the boundaries of these guidelines, we're going to live longer, we're going to live happier, we will have more prosperity and deeper and greater friendships if we will allow wisdom to have our ear and not foolishness. So I think we ought to be praying, Lord, give me a sensitivity to listen to wisdom and not listen to the foolishness that Madison Avenue and my unsaved family and my unsaved co-workers and my own flesh is trying to whisper into my ear. Allow me to have my life run consistent with what your word says.